The next matter is Bauermeister versus Waste Management Company of Nebraska, Inc. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Good morning. May it please the court. I'm Francie Reedman on behalf of the appellant Waste Management of Nebraska. It's a day for repeat performances, as this case too has also been before you once before. We previously disposed of this case on the rule against perpetuities. The Supreme Court reversed and enunciated for the first time that the rule against perpetuities doesn't apply to a contractual option to purchase. The Supreme Court reversed and remanded for you to consider the remaining assignment of errors. Those assignments, in no particular order, are as follows. Is the option an invalid restraint on alienation? Was the option validly exercised in 2006? And was the option validly exercised in 2007? When we were here the first time, when this case was first appealed, we did not have the benefit of the Supreme Court's decision that the rule against perpetuities was not going to apply. And I think it's important for this court to know that just because the rule against perpetuities doesn't apply does not mean that the restraint on alienation doctrine does not apply. I'd like to give you a couple of sites that weren't in the brief because, as I said, we didn't have the benefit of the Supreme Court's decision. In the Treatise 6 American Law of Property at Section 26-15 and a Maryland case at 274 A. 2nd 353 entitled Commonwealth Realty versus Bowers. Both of those address the fact that the restraint on alienation doctrine may apply and can apply even though the contractual provision is not governed by the rule against perpetuities. It's also important for the court to note that the restraint on alienation doctrine, unlike the rule against perpetuities, does apply to contractual options to purchase. It contains to the rule against perpetuities now apparently only applies to the donative transfer, whereas the restraint on alienation doctrine also applies to contracts. This court has decided and analyzed the issue as it applies to contracts, and so has the Nebraska Supreme Court. So that should not be a bar to the application of that doctrine to this option. So the question becomes, is the option a restraint on alienation? The option in this contract provided that during the monitoring period, which the record reveals is 30 years, plus two additional years, the sellers have the option to repurchase the property. During that time period, the purchasers, my client, can't sell it. They can't encumber it. They can't do anything with that property.
Well, they can sell it, can't they? There's nothing that prohibits them from selling it. It just has a value. The problem is that this contract determines the value.
Actually, if you look at the agreement under paragraph 30, it says during the period of the option, purchasers shall not sell, convey, mortgage, or otherwise encumber the property. So no, they can't sell it. Not during those 32 years, the term of the option. So that is the restraint. And again, that's at paragraph 30 of the purchase agreement. So now that it's established there is a restraint against the alienation of this property, the question becomes, is it an unreasonable restraint? And in order to answer that question, the court looks at two issues. What's the duration and what's the purchase price of the property when you're looking at an option? Well, the duration is 32 years. That's an unreasonable length of time. The amount is $1. We're talking about 280 acres, and the selling price is $1. It's those two elements together that make this an unreasonable restraint on the alienation. The next assignment of errors address the purported exercise of the option. And I admit this gets very convoluted, especially when you look at the Bauermeisters and the warranty deeds that transfer part of the option into the Fred Bauermeister Trust, and part of the option gets transferred into the Dorothy Bauermeister Trust, and then we have Dorothy Bauermeister as the successor trustee of Fred's trust. So it gets very convoluted, and there's a diagram at the end of our brief in our addendum, which is kind of color-coded, which at least helped me sort things out as to where each of these options went. Did it go into Fred's trust? Did it go into Dorothy's trust? Did it just remain in, once they passed away, in their estates? The provision in the agreement, well, the agreement itself identifies the sellers as four people, Mr. and Mrs. Bauermeister, Mr. and Mrs. Deaver. The option is created in those four people. It's created as tenants in common. That means each of these persons has a 1/4 undivided interest in the option. We have a collision here between contract law and property law, because plaintiffs argue that, well, according to the language of the contract, seller or sellers could exercise the option. Not everybody had to exercise it. Well, one seller can't exercise the whole because he or she only owns a 1/4 undivided interest in it. And when you try and put that into practice, if you look at the realities of it, what if you had either Mr. or Mrs. Deaver come to Waste Management during the monitoring period, present them with the dollar and say, we'd like to exercise the option for the whole, we'd like the 280 acres. Well, Waste Management still has an obligation under the agreement to make that same offer available to the Bauermeisters. The Bauermeisters can't have four different people exercising the option. In practicality, it just doesn't work. So when you look at the contract and you look in its application and you also look at property law, you come to the realization that it has to be exercised by everyone.
You're discussing a potential conflict between the holders of the option. Does the evidence show any actual conflict?
There is no conflict between the holders of the option. I'm looking at it from the obligation of Waste Management. In looking at the contract before any option is exercised, what if, how can four separate people exercise the option? They can't, unless they do it jointly. And there's the law review, the NOVA law review that we cited in our brief that discusses when there are multiple people that have the option to exercise, it must be exercised jointly. And it's solely for this reason. You can't have four separate people exercise the same option. Therefore, if all four of them need to exercise, or everyone's interest needs to be exercised at the same time, then you look at the 2006 purported exercise of the option. And I think it's very clear that was not exercised with everyone's interest.
Seems to me that there are really two questions. There's how many people's interests have to be exercised, and your argument there would be all of their interests have to be exercised. But the separate question that I think you're trying to merge into the first question is, who has the power to exercise on behalf of all of the people that have to exercise? And if the agreement is worded in such a fashion that one of the holders can exercise on behalf of all of the holders, then doesn't another holder's remedy lie against the other holder, not against Waste Management?
But there's nothing in the contract that alleviates Waste Management obligation to convey to any and all of them. I mean, there's nothing in the agreement that says upon the exercise of the option by one person, everyone else's option extinguishes. So the liability remains with Waste Management in being able to perform under the contract if you're going to read it that each and every one of them has the opportunity and the right to exercise the option. So the 2006, when you look at it, only the two remaining, Dorothy Bauermeister and Mrs. Devers exercised the option. They didn't do it in any representative capacity. When you look at the diagram, you can see that part of that option, Fred Bauermeister transferred into Dorothy Bauermeister's trust. Part of it went into his own trust, and part of it just remained out, which would have landed in his estate on his death. The option wasn't exercised in any representative capacity. And if you look at 2007, it wasn't even all cleared up then. I'd like to reserve my remaining few seconds for rebuttal.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel, whenever you're ready.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the Court. I'm Dave Domina, and I'm here on behalf of Dorothy Bauermeister individually and as trustee of her trust and her deceased husband's trust. That's three capacities. And her two sons, Ron and Robert. That's five. I'm here on behalf of the estate of Clara Deaver and its personal representative, the personal representative of the estate of Richard Deaver, deceased, and in case they have an interest, Larry Deaver and Roger Deaver and Richard Deaver. That makes 10. They owe $10 to exercise the option in this case, which is exercisable at any time during the period of monitoring of the landfill, which is 30 years and 2 years thereafter. If there is any question whatsoever about any and all of these persons exercising this option, and any question about the capacity to exercise it, I hereby, on behalf of each and all of them, tender to Waste Management $10 and exercise the option. And if this exercise was defective, after we litigate how it was defective, we'll have 23 years more to cure the next objection. I think that the Supreme Court's remand order really focuses on the exercise of the option. In 2006, Dorothy Bauermeister had conveyed her interest to a trust. She exercised at that time. She had an interest in the land because she had the remainder interest from her husband's trust. He was already deceased. He died in 2004. Clara Deaver was an original party. She exercised. Her exercise doesn't say that she was exercising on a limited basis. The Bauermeisters and the Deavers have never had a dispute about whether they are all in if any one of them exercises this option, and they will not allow Waste Management to divide them by hypothesizing what-ifs about the family exercising or not simultaneously or not. They want the farm back. The rule against perpetuities doesn't apply. The doctrine of restraint on alienation went away, we think, with the ruling on the rule against perpetuities, and Spanish Oaks versus Hy-Vee, 265 Nebraska at 140, assists us with our position in that regard. It is time for the deed to this property to come home. Thank you.
Thank you. How much time does the appellant have left? We won't start the clock until you get up here and ready to go.
Thank you.
Counsel.
This is the first time that the 10 people, the 10 interests, have expressed or tendered the exercise of the option. They didn't do it in 2006. They didn't do it in 2007. There are six interests represented in the caption of this case as plaintiffs, not 10. Today is the first day that all 10 of who needed to exercise the option purported to exercise.
What effect, if any, do you think Mr. Domina's action in open court today has?
It allows me to stop at the East Campus and get my caramel malt order after after arguments. The issue, you know what? I don't know. Because the issue before the court is, was it exercised validly in 2006? Was it exercised validly in 2007? And is it even an option that can be exercised, or is it barred by the restraint on alienation? So under the context of a lawsuit, I don't think it has any effect.
Thank you.
Okay?
Thank you very much. Matters deemed submitted, and counsel are excused.